scheduled in the bottom of the ninth. Look out!
Oh, my goodness.
The 0-1. Oh, that got him, and it got him in the face. Oh, my goodness.
Well, after the little fracas.
Hello and welcome. You are up and in with the Chin Music Podcast. I am Nick, your host. Happy Jackie Robinson Day to all those who celebrate, aka every person in Major League Baseball and all fans of Major League Baseball. It's an awesome day. Everybody wears 42 to honor Jackie Robinson. It's one of my favorite days in Major League Baseball to watch baseball, see everybody number 42. It's very fun. It's just fun paying homage to Jackie Robinson and all that he did for the game. I've got a Cardinals 42 jersey. I just showed it to the guys. I'm one of my favorite Cardinals jerseys. So that's cool. And it's cool that they do this. So they've been doing it, I think, ever since like late 2000s, like before 2010. It started, I think, 2007, 2008. I think a couple players asked if they could wear it to honor him because it's Jackie Robinson's number 42 is retired across all of baseball. But there is one day, April 15th, every year where everybody wears it to honor. So that's pretty cool. So happy Jackie Robinson Day. We got a lot to talk about today since we missed last week due to the solar eclipse. And I will now introduce to you my co-hosts. First up, we've got the prospect guy. If you have questions about the tools of an 18-year-old in the Rockies organization, he's your guy. What was the score of the Trash Pandas game yesterday? Only he would know. The only thing he loves more than Ricky Tiedemann is a Topps one-of-one Alfonso Soriano rookie card. Omaha native Ben. Ben, here's the thing. I haven't wrote new questions yet because I forgot to do that before the podcast, so I'm going to come up with something on the fly here. Who has been your favorite player to watch in this young season?
That's pretty tough. I guess I'm going to go with kind of a cop-out, but, like, it's also, I think, like, the real answer, it's Ellie De La Cruz. I'm a Dynasty owner, and he has been a blast. Hit some big nukes, and everyone was kind of questioning him. There's a lot of Ks early, and he seems to be, you know, getting his footing at least a little bit. I think he's going to remain streaky, but, man, when he hits a stretch when he's on, I think he's the most exciting player in the game right now. So I got to go with that. And the score of the Trash Pandas yesterday, 5-3 Pandas over Birmingham.
Did you look this up knowing that I was going to use that intro again?
100%.
Nice. I appreciate that. And now that I've had time to come up with a real question that's not baseball related, because I think that's a good part of the show that I get to ask you all a question that is not baseball related at the beginning of the show. Ben, I'm curious what your favorite video game growing up was.
That's kind of tough because like a lot of different formats. I played a lot of like early gen Pokemon games on Game Boy Advanced.
Yeah.
That was probably like my first like big thing that I would binge, but like I've spent hundreds of hours on that. And then Minecraft was huge when I was younger too. I still love Minecraft. And then most sports games I've spent a lot of time on as well. So I would say the like big first one though was the like Gen 1, Gen 2, and Gen 3 Pokemon games.
Yeah, I definitely put a lot of time into those. Absolutely. Thank you, Ben. The next host is never going to forgive ESPN for their lack of prospects in their system. He believes that every time Victor Scott steals a base, an angel gets their wings. An annual contender in our Dynasty League who once played number 6 on the field, but he is number 1 on this podcast. Kirksville native Brock. Brock, I'm curious what your favorite app for fantasy baseball is.
That's funny that you should ask, Nick. I will also say, kind of still getting used to the new intros there, but I think that my favorite app, It's tough because day to day, I still prefer looking at my ESPN system. I think it's just easier to pull up games, stats. Maybe I'm just a little more comfortable with the UI on that platform. But as far as the dynasty goes, I mean, you kind of already said it with my intro. Fantrax has everyone that you could even imagine or ever want. And they add guys that you've never even heard of every day. And I get to update this person that I've never heard of has been added to the player pool. So for a dynasty context, Fantrax is nice because you can just kind of sit and wait and just set your lineup. And the head-to-head scoring is kind of hard to follow. But day-to-day, I still think ESPN is a cop-out answer. But I think if you're playing in redraft, you just stick with ESPN. I'm going to lean towards ESPN as I spend a little more time there, I think, than Fantrax still.
Yeah, I
Oh,
think
and happy Jackie Robinson Day to you.
appreciate it. Appreciate it. I think I agree with everything you said there. I will say that I do like Fantrax for all of the people that are available on the app. However, the when you look at your roster, not being able to just see daily stats is something that I wish you could see. I haven't found a good way to do that yet. So that's one thing that I like ESPN for, is that just when you look at your roster, you can immediately see what everybody's done today and kind of get a good idea as to how your guys are playing today. And now that I've asked you that and had time to come up with a question that is not fantasy or baseball related, if you could have dinner with three historical figures, who would they be?
Three is tough.
Is it
Like in the
easier if you just
history
get
of.
one?
Okay, I'll go three. First one, I would say Jesus Christ would be an interesting one to sit down and have dinner with. Two, I'm gonna go with. This is tough. I don't know. For some reason, I can't stop thinking of Harry S. Truman. Yeah, Ben also said so much. Free wine. I think Harry S. Truman, just because I went to Truman State University. He's the only president from Missouri, and it's also the person I could not get out of my head. So he was a president during a pretty trying time in America. He also was kind of not really the person that decided it, I wouldn't think, but he was around when we dropped the bombs in Hiroshima and Nagasaki. So just probably an interesting perspective on the world. And then my third and final, we will go with can't be a president. I don't know. We'll just go with a baseball great. We'll go with the Babe. Just get Babe Ruth around, hang out with Babe Ruth for a while, see how baseball was back in his day.
I
That
can't
was
wait for you to
very.
get canceled for the Harry S. Truman take. And I
I never.
also go ahead.
All I said was it was a trying time, and he would have an interesting perspective.
Also the Babe Ruth one is interesting. I think you could just pull any random plumber from the early 1900s and you'd get the same perspective, but just kidding, just kidding. I understand the Babe Ruth thing. That would be interesting to get an early take on baseball,
I
but
would have him
especially on
sign every, I would have him
go.
sign every baseball that I own and then become a
Yeah,
millionaire.
that would be a good that would be a good investment on your part. All right, last but not least, we've got someone who has never actually listened to an episode of this show. The reigning champion of our redraft fantasy league, the self-proclaimed anti-commissioner in our dynasty league, and my biggest rival, the founding father of Book Club TS, St. Louis native Vansel. Vansel, I'm curious if you could, I've already asked you this question actually, now that I'm thinking of it. If you could rewatch a movie for the first time, what movie would you pick?
The first one that came to my head when you said that was Inception, just because of all the like twists and whatnot that go into it. I feel like the first time viewing that is, much more of like, whoa, what's happening versus other movies. So I'll go with that.
Yeah, I think that's a good one. I think that's a good one. I think what I had asked you before was TV show, if I remember correctly.
Michael Bush is homered again.
5 days in a row.
5 days in a row for Michael
You
Bush.
can't stop him. I
That's a
wanted to beat
little
them to that punchline.
sneak peek at one of our segments later about our fill in the blank. I think Michael Bush was going to be one of the names I was going to mention. So that's fun. 5 days in a row with a homer for Michael Bush. That dude is gonna be good. I guess he
Is
already
good. Is good.
is good, yes. All right, let's do some content updates. We can go right back to Vansel since you were just talking about movies. Content updates. It's been 2 weeks now. What kind of content have you been taking in?
Well, this weekend, watch the Masters, of course. Scottie Scheffler winning yet again. And also some good Premier League. So the race is coming down. It's really close. First good title race in a little bit, I feel like. Unfortunately, Tottenham, I woke up at 6:30 in the morning on Saturday and then watched them just play terrible soccer and lose 4-0. So that was really disappointing. But then Arsenal lost, so that was cool. Liverpool also lost, so now Man City is 2 points ahead in the title race. So coming down to the wire.
And there's no playoffs there, right? It's just like a regular season. Whoever has the most points at the end is the winner.
Correct. They have some in-season tournaments that I guess can replace it, but the Premier League and in general European soccer just comes down to regular season to get the title.
Gotcha. Gotcha. And Ben, content updates. It's been 2 weeks. What have you been on? What have you been taking in?
A lot of baseball. I watched Agent Argyle yesterday. It's not very good. Other than that, nothing super notable. I haven't been to the theater in a while. Haven't really watched much new. So, yeah, just a lot of baseball, whole lot of it. And then, like, researching, like, I don't know, because when the season starts, not just the season, there's 16 different leagues being played in the minors right now. So you're trying to keep track of those guys and who might be a hot name. So it's a lot to do. So mostly baseball.
Yeah, I feel that. I sent a message in our podcast group chat today that even though we have almost a full slate on this Monday, which is atypical. I think it might even be a full slate. Every single team is playing today. It's probably because of Jackie Robinson Day. Usually Mondays are not full slates of games, but I was telling them that I was still disappointed because there are no minor league games going on today. But I think we've been talking a lot about the minors recently, and I wanted to keep this show all about the major league, so I will not digress there. Content updates. Brock, what do you got?
It's gonna kind of be second verse same as the first with Ben. I have only really been watching baseball and baseball content. Haven't watched any TV shows or any movies in the 2 weeks that we have been gone. So yeah, we'll just keep it at that and we'll probably get right into it, I guess.
Yeah. For my content, I think I've taken in a lot of baseball, obviously, like they all said. I watched a little bit of college basketball, both men's and women's. I watched both of those championships. That was very fun. I got to see all three of you between our last show and now this show. I had a little bit of a trip home. It was kind of a three purpose trip, I guess four purpose trip if you include the purpose of seeing all the podcast boys. But I got to see all three of these guys. I got to celebrate my brother's birthday. I got to go to Cardinals home opener, which was very fun. And I also got to see the full solar eclipse. So that was a nice trip. Got to see a lot of friends, got to have dinner with my grandma. It was a good trip overall. And that was I guess a lot of, I mean, it wasn't really content that I was taking in, but I guess the solar eclipse was cool. I got to go to two Cardinals games while I was home. That was great. Like I said, saw these guys, drove to Columbia, met up with Brock and Ben, and we went to a card shop. I found a Billy Hamilton card, which was incredible, and I was very excited about. Got some cards for my brother, got one for my roommate. It was cool. It was all cool. And then Vansel and I got to go to a Cardinals game. We watched the Sunday Cardinals game against the Marlins, where we gave up 6 runs in the first inning and lost big time, but that's all right. Yeah, no, it was pretty good. I'm trying to think of any other content that I watched other than that. No, not really. Just college basketball. Oh, I guess I watched a little bit of the Masters, not a ton. I watched definitely Thursday, Friday. Got to see Tiger make the cut. And then Saturday, when Tiger Woods kind of collapsed, and I think he shot plus 10 on Saturday or something crazy like that. Once he was out of the race, I kind of didn't really watch it anymore because he's really my only interest in golf. All right, that's it for content updates. Let's talk some tea around the league. I think this is kind of old news. We can kind of skim over it because we've talked about it a lot. But Shohei Ohtani, I don't know if you all have had time to read the entirety of the complaint and all the different messages that were sent back and forth, but I think it is pretty clear from the messages sent back and forth that Ohtani is pretty much clear of any guilt. It looks like Ipe, his interpreter, was stealing from him, acknowledged multiple times in text messages that he was stealing from him. Also, just public service announcement. I'm going to be a public defender in the future. If you're ever thinking about or are committing crimes, don't write about it in texts or emails. They will all come out and it will be very clear and you will be in bad shape. So Ipe is, I think, well, they already said he's pleading guilty. And he said, I can't remember exactly what some of the texts were pretty funny. He's like texting his bookie. He's like, I'm not very good at this sports betting thing, am I? And then another one of the texts, he says, like, even, and this was after all the news was coming out, so he knew that it was going to be in trouble. He was going to be in trouble, and he's texting his bookmaker, like, hey, are you seeing the headlines? And the bookmaker's like, yeah, I'm seeing it, but I know that it's all a cover-up. And he's like, no, like, I was stealing from him. He, after all these headlines come out, he's texting the bookmaker saying, like, no, I was stealing from him. Or I think he didn't say it exactly like that. He was like, well, no, I technically was stealing from him. So it's like, I don't know. I don't know how you can be that, like, that's crazy to go to the point of texting somebody after you know that you're under investigation. Like, no, I was stealing. But anyway, it did end up that he stole upwards of $16 million rather than the original reported 4.5. But yeah, it seems like Ohtani's been pretty much cleared entirely of any guilt. So that's good for baseball, but obviously bad for Ohtani. And I think this, the whole situation kind of sucks for Ohtani because a lot of people were speculating that he was, guilty for a little bit. I mean, to have your best friend and interpreter steal from you and, commit all this fraud and like calling his bank and acting like he was him, all this kind of stuff. And then to have your best friend do that. And then on top of it, to have all these people be speculating that you were actually guilty. It can't be a fun situation for Ohtani. And I do feel for him. But I there's not a ton, unless any of you want to say anything about Otani, I'll just move on to the next point. Is like I said, I think we've in the aggregate talked a ton about Otani just over the course of the beginning of this season, just because he's been all over the news. But the next tee around the league I will talk about is the Jerks and Profar and the Dodgers fighting. This was interesting. I don't know if you all saw the original incident. But it was just a pitch that was in, and it didn't really look like anything to me. But the so I guess Jerks and Profar got a pitch in, and then he like stepped out of the batter's box like towards the mound, and was seemingly upset about getting a pitch in, and then the benches cleared, and the actual instance itself wasn't really wasn't really a big deal, but afterwards, after the game, and a reporter was asking Will Smith, the Dodgers catcher, about it, and Will Smith was like, I don't know why we would throw at him, he's irrelevant. And then the very next day, Jerks and Profar hits a double to win the game against the Dodgers. So there was a little bit of fight going back and forth there. Did either of you guys, any of you guys see anything about the Jerks and Profar Dodgers fight? Is it fun? Do you like this for baseball? What, I don't know. I think Jerks and Profar getting upset originally was kind of ridiculous. Brock, what do you got on this?
Yeah, I think I like it. First off, I think Jerks and Profar. I mean, yeah, he's played in the MLB for like 10 years, and I mean, guy pitchers will occasionally let one fly, and it'll be up in and at you. I don't think that they really were throwing at him. I don't think that Will Smith should have responded by he's irrelevant, because that just gave him the bulletin board material to go out and hit a game-winning double. So that I kind of thought that that was funny the way that it all worked out. But yeah, mostly I just like the Jerks and Profar was called irrelevant and then went out and hit the game-winning run or the game-winning hit against them. So that's pretty much all I have to say about it. I think that Manny Machado kind of had a little post-game interview, and he said kind of what I just said right there. He's like, the guy's played in the MLB for 10 years. He's not really irrelevant. So that's kind of hard to do just as an irrelevant baseball player. I think anyone who really follows baseball has probably heard of Jerks and Profar. So I liked it though. Good karma in a 24-hour span.
Yeah, definitely. But to be fair, like he was the one that kind of started it all by getting upset over an inside pitch that he should not have got upset. I think that both of them blew it out of proportion originally. Jerks and Profar getting, upset about it, and then him calling a 10-year, MLB vet irrelevant. But then, yeah, the game-winning double the next day was cool. Ben, you got anything?
Yeah, I'm taking the opposite stance. Jerks and Profar is irrelevant. He's never been good. And I think in a situation where you think you're getting thrown at, you got to step back and go, am I in the guy in this lineup that this team would probably choose to throw at? Jerks and Profar is not at all the guy in that lineup you throw at. It would be Machado, Tatis, Xander Bogaerts, Ha-Seong Kim, anyone who's not Jerks and Profar, basically. So I understand what Will Smith is saying there. Like, dude, stop freaking out. We're not throwing at you. We wouldn't throw at you because nobody would care. That's just kind of how it is. Like, if Jerks and Profar got hit, broke his wrist, nobody would be that outraged. Happened to Manny Machado, people would be losing their minds. Like, in that sense, like, I think Jerks and Profar is a pretty irrelevant player. And I think, like, you could replace his stats with somebody on their AAA roster. So I kind of think Jerickson is a pretty relevant player in that sense.
I just think that's a terrible take. He's been in the MLB for 10 years. He was like the number one prospect at one point. Yes, he did overreact when he got pitched up and in, but he's on a
Do you
1 year
see what I'm
deal.
saying,
He's
though?
trying to.
Like, if
Yes, I see what
I'm
you're
going to
saying,
throw at
but
a guy
Will
in that
Smith,
lineup, it's not Profar.
and that's all fine, but if I'm in the MLB, I'm not calling other players. I'm not using the justification that it was an accidental pitch inside by like completely degrading them and saying they're irrelevant. That's what's wrong with all of it.
Vance,
And
what do
then
you
Jerks
got?
and Profar got the last.
Yeah, Jerks and Profar also did get the last laugh. Vance, you got anything to say?
The only thing I have to say is bring back rivalries. I mean, we were talking about it before we started recording about the big rivalries. And I mean, when was the last time we had like an intense moment between, Red Sox, Yankees, Dodgers, Giants, Cardinals, Cubs? Like, I can't really think of anything, or even the interdivisional rivalries like the Padres and Dodgers. I think it's more fun when you have those intense rivalries. Obviously, don't injure anyone, but like get a little more intensity in some of these regular season games. I'm all for it, when there's 162 of them. These kind of things spice it up. So bring back fighting.
I think that maybe a lot of the typical rivalries in baseball have been hurt a little bit by at least definitely last year, but maybe even the last couple years by either one or both of the teams involved in said big rivalries not being that good or not really fielding great teams currently. Like last year, we were bad, so us and the Cubs wasn't, I don't know, it didn't feel like the fire was there. I mean, it just didn't really feel like there was any fire on our roster at all last
When was the
year.
last time there was a big Cardinals Cubs moment?
Who did Wainwright, or not Wainwright, Molina kick? Was that the Cubs, or I can't really remember. Or no, that was the Reds. I can't really remember, honestly.
When was the last big Yankees Red Sox
I mean, I think
situation?
that wild card game a couple of years ago.
Well, that's just an intense wild card
Yeah, there wasn't any like.
that MLB got rid of for no reason.
Right.
Well, I guess some reason, but not good reason if you ask me. But
Yeah,
there
I see
just
what you're
hasn't been
saying.
like a big, bases or benches clearing, like everyone's mad and it rolls over into years, Bring it back.
Yeah, not a lot of fire in these rivalries anymore. You heard it here first. Need more fire and rivalries. All right. Next up, we've got, I guess there's been speculation that the Royals are cheating. This kind of goes into my last point, so I'll just kind of lump them together. I had a take on the last show, or maybe it wasn't the last show, maybe it was 2 shows ago, that the Central divisions, so NL Central and AL Central, would not have a team that wins more than 85 games amongst the two divisions, which has turned out to be a very poor take because the AL Central looks like it's got four, I don't want to say like legitimate contenders in terms of like actually making noise in the playoffs, but definitely four legitimate contenders in terms of winning the division. And the NL Central, the Cardinals, I've been, fairly pleased with how we've been playing. I think we're a game under 500 right now. Maybe we're right at 500, and we're in last place in the division. We're 2 games under 500, and we're in last place in the division. Like the NL Central has looked like all good teams. I don't really buy the Brewers, but I believe that the Pirates and the Reds and the Cubs could all be good. I guess we can talk. We can kind of lump these two together. Obviously, I don't think the Royals are actually cheating, but they went on a tear there. I can't remember exactly what the stat was. I think it was 4 or 5 games in a row. They, or maybe it was even more than that. They scored 7+ runs in all these games in a row. I think it's just the Royals' core is actually just really good. Like, I think Bobby Witt, MJ Melendez, Vinny Pasquantino, Michael Garcia. Like I just think that's gonna, and Salvador Perez had a good start to the season. I think he got hurt the other day, but I don't think it seemed like anything serious. I think they're just off to a good start because their hitting is really good. And they added Seth Lugo and Michael Wacha in the offseason, and they've both been pitching well. Like I think the Royals might just be good. I don't think they're cheating, but people are saying that they know what pitches are coming just because they've been hitting the crap out of the ball, but I think that they're just playing well.
I feel like you should go more into depth of the conspiracy on the logic behind why they would start cheating.
Do you want to talk about that? I'm sure. I mean, I know it's that their owner wants more people. I don't actually know exactly what it all is.
The conspiracy is because the people of Kansas City voted no to pay for a new stadium. So the idea is they started cheating so that they would be good and more people would have interest, and then they would get the stadium vote passed, or then they move the team and it's like, ha, kind of thing, get back at the fans.
Yeah, just by being good again. I guess that makes sense.
So that's the like reasoning on why, and then a good stretch of play.
Don't think we don't buy it. I don't think, but well, actually, I know that we don't buy it, but it is kind of a funny thing. But I do think that the Royals are just good. Brock, what do you got?
I think, and Vance might have said this, I had to step away for a second, but part of that thread was like the Royals like only swung at Hunter Brown's fastball, which there's other reasons you could say that maybe he was tipping pitches, or maybe he was only throwing strikes with his fastball, but they were like just swinging at his fastball. Like anytime it was an off speed, they wouldn't even swing. And Hunter Brown, even last year got a lot more swinging strikes with his off-speed pitches, and they were just absolutely sitting and teeing off on his fastball. So again, you can chalk that up to a lot of other things, but that was part of their argument on that Twitter thread.
I saw another thing that I guess Bailey Ober, like obviously he had the really good spring. A lot of people were really excited about him. And then he came out against the Royals and gave up like 9 runs or 8 runs in the first game of the season. And then if you look back at Bailey Ober's numbers against the Royals, like all time, which I guess is probably only a couple starts, but the Royals have just always blown him up. And then people were starting to think like, oh, well, maybe Bailey Ober was tipping his pitches and the Royals have caught on and nobody else knows about it type deal. And then I think people started digging a little bit deeper into that. Okay, like was he tipping his pitches? Did they know a pitch was coming? And then they kind of, one thing led to another and like, oh, maybe they always know a pitch is coming. But yeah, no, I think they're just good. And maybe they have something on Bailey Ober that other people don't have because he has looked a lot better. Since that Royal start, but Ben, you got anything?
No, I've no opinions on this conspiracy theory. Royals better than everyone expected. My take's looking good.
Was about to say, except for you, you predicted them to win.
Yeah, I mean, everyone, it's a conspiracy theory. I mean, Bobby Witt's a superstar and they have enough decent productive hitters around him to be a good offense. So I don't think they're going to be this good all year, but they've been encouraging.
Was there a sock bet on that Vansel had proposed?
Yeah, it was whoever, because we each had a different team. It
In the
was
Central.
whoever team finish last has to eat a sock.
I think it was Vansel to
Something
sock
like
no matter what.
that.
I
I think,
think
yeah,
it
that's
was
actually.
Nick eats socks in his free time, and then he just admitted that.
All right, moving on. The next topic that we had under T around the league kind of lumps into our next big topic. So we'll kind of, I think, just bring it all together here and talk a little bit about pitching injuries. It's hard to be around the game of baseball or a fan of baseball right now and not, have not heard about all of the different pitchers that have gone down to either season-ending injuries or just any sort of injuries, just to name a few: Spencer Strider, Shane Bieber, Bobby Miller, Yuri Perez, Gerrit Cole, Sandy Alcantara, Framber Valdez, and that's not a complete list at all. And those are all guys that are, top of the game when they're healthy, top 20 pitchers in the entire league. And then obviously there's the guys that came into the league on the IR and, Scherzer and DeGrom. And it's a lot of very big names, good pitchers that are hurt. And it sucks because I think it hurts the product. Because whenever Spencer Strider's on the mound, you have to go watch him. Whenever Shane Bieber looked great this year, he looked absolutely incredible. And Yuri Perez is one of the youngest, most exciting players in baseball right now. So it's just tough to see all these big pitchers get hurt. And that kind of brings me to the tee around the league is Max Meyer just got sent down by the Marlins. I think it was today or this morning after he had a 23 swinging strike performance against the Atlanta Braves, who I think are, indisputably a top two offense in the league. I think it's tough. I understand why they're doing it. It's because of all these injuries. They're trying to limit his innings. He's coming off of a Tommy John surgery himself, and he wasn't going to be able to fully pitch, an entire season. And they do this to keep their guys healthy. However, you look at a guy like Yuri Perez, who they literally just did this same thing for last year. They sent him down, they played with his innings, they tried to keep him healthy, and then he came in this year and got hurt in 2 starts. So it's impossible to say what's causing all of these pitching injuries. There's been a lot of discussion about the pitch clock, the introduction of the pitch clock, but I don't think there's great evidence for that quite yet. Obviously, we're only in the second year of the pitch clock, and the amount of injuries. I've seen people, I haven't obviously run the numbers, but I've seen people with numbers indicating that this year isn't, or the last 2 years aren't necessarily a huge outlier in terms of pitching injuries. There's also pitchers just chasing velocity. Obviously, pitchers are throwing faster now than they ever have. There was a long Verlander monologue. It's on social media if you're interested. I definitely recommend going to watch it. I think he was very well spoken talking about all the different factors. But one of the things he was talking about is pitch velocity. I mean, he talks about his perspective. Like, obviously, he can go out, or at least maybe not now, but over the course of the end of his career, he started, like, he was throwing faster than he ever had. And he, obviously, he wouldn't throw 100 every pitch, but he hit 100 a couple times, which was crazy because it was, you know, he didn't used to do that in earlier in his career. But the way that he talked about how he increased his velocity, he's like, I don't have to go out there and throw 100 every single pitch because I'm fighting for a roster spot. Whereas these younger guys that are coming up that can throw 100 feel like they need to do it over the course of their entire start because obviously stuff is more effective when you're throwing 100. So they feel like they have to be throwing 100% every single pitch, and it's just breaking these guys' arms. And it's tough because obviously oftentimes higher pitch velocity leads to better results. I think there's pretty clear correlation there that it's harder to hit a faster ball more often than not. So everybody is, you know, encouraged to throw faster. They're going to driveline, adding a couple ticks of velocity, and then guys are just getting hurt. That's exactly what happened to Shane Bieber this year. He went to driveline in the offseason, added some velocity. He had two starts where he looked amazing, looked like he was going to maybe compete for the AL Cy Young. And then he's hurt. Tommy John surgery, out for the year. It just seems like it's, you know, it seems like a very common story now. And the no more sticky stuff, I don't think it was last year, but 2 years ago, they really cracked down on the sticky stuff usage, which is basically, you know, any sort of substance that pitchers were using to have a good grip on the baseball. They banned it, and it was already banned, but they've really kind of cracked down on pitchers using it. Like Glass now came out and said that there was a really good monologue. You can look this one up on social media as well. Tyler Glass now talked about the sticky stuff and how he used to use a combination of rosin and sunscreen to hold to get a better grip of the ball. And basically he described it by being able to use just his fingertips when he's gripping the ball because he has better grip. Whereas when he's not allowed to use that stuff, he has to put the ball deeper into his hand and hold onto it tighter in order to get the same action and same spin on it. And he said in interviews, like, I think guys are going to get hurt more based on doing this. And then he almost immediately got hurt after that. So I think it's a combination of different things. I don't know what solution there is to it. Verlander talked about in his monologue to, you know, combat the chase for velocity. He talked about maybe if a pitcher doesn't go, like if your starter doesn't go five full innings, then you lose your DH, was one of his suggestions that he, I guess, had talked to other pitchers about. And I honestly don't hate that solution. I think it's good to, you know, promote pitchers going longer into games, and maybe that'll, you know, discourage starters from trying to throw 100 miles an hour for an entire game, because it's just not something that many people are capable of doing and staying healthy, at least. I think that there are very few pitchers in baseball that have proven that they can throw it that fast for extended periods and remain healthy. So I thought that was kind of an interesting solution. I don't think there's any way you can truly cap velocity in baseball. I don't know what good that would do, but I don't know. Maybe Mozeliak is on to something, and the pitchers that you want are the guys that aren't throwing hard but are going deep into games. I don't know. We can start with Brock here. Brock, I said a lot of things. There's the Max Meyer news of him being sent down, which is a bummer, obviously, after one of the best start of his career for sure, where he looked amazing. There's all the pitcher injuries. There's potential, you know, potential solutions. Just what do you got?
Yeah, you kind of covered a lot of the bases with the pitcher injury whole situation, but I do agree. I think there's a lot of compounding factors at play there. I tend to lean, I mean, they're both right. Justin Verlander is right that an increase in velocity has a higher correlation to an increased probability of having Tommy John or other shoulder injuries. But I do really, really think that them getting rid of the sticky stuff. I thought that Tyler Glasnow's little soundbite was the most compelling because he's talking about how when you grip the ball harder, you're engaging more muscles in your forearm, which, like, when you're locked in your forearm, it's putting all of the strain and torque into your UCL. And whereas before you could have a looser grip and you wouldn't have to, again, put the grip on the ball because the tack or the sunscreen and rosin was acting as that tension in your fingers. So it was a lot looser in your arm. So when your muscles weren't flexed, the tension was more spread out throughout your arm. And I guess I just never really thought of it that way, or I thought that that was a very like real life example of the impact of the ban of sticky stuff. I think that really hurts. I don't have an issue with sticky stuff, to be honest. But I think as far as solutions go, I don't think that they're gonna like reallow sticky stuff. I don't see them walking that back in a 2 year time span or 3 years, however long it's been. However, I think an interesting solution would be they've already done to speed up the game. Like when you put in a reliever, he has to face three batters. Like if a pitcher doesn't pitch 5 innings or six is a little hard because that's a quality start. But if they don't pitch 5 innings, then the next guy you put in has to pitch, face six batters or essentially two, I guess six. Yeah, just double the innings limit for your next pitcher. Because the DH could really alter the outcome of a game, but just making that next pitcher be more of a long relief guy, I think that that could be an interesting wrinkle. It is really, really sad to see the best arms in the game all go down, and it does, I mean, obviously hurt the product of baseball. Yeah, I think you covered a lot of that, but I think that that could be an interesting solution. I don't know what you guys think, or if you guys want to talk about Max Meyer, but Vansel or Ben, you guys want to take it from there? Ben?
I don't have a ton of thoughts. I think you guys covered most of it pretty well. But I do think the DH polling situation will be interesting, especially because we'll be seeing a lot of relief pitcher ABs, if that were a thing, which is hilarious because like those are the guys who have hit the least. And I think it would like even open up like a new part of the game to where I think like two-way players would become a little more common even. Because you would almost want a guy on your roster who could bail you out in a situation like that, who can like eat up innings and take good ABs. So I don't know. It would kind of add like a funky wrinkle to the game. And I am pro having to watch Giovanni Gallegos take an AB.
Yeah, I mean, I think, I mean, Verlander, the way he made it sound like he's been talking to people about it for a long time and he'd really thought about this solution. Like, I do kind of like his solution. And I think that just in the grand scheme of things, when you have, and I don't know if 5 innings is the right, or maybe 5 1/3 would be, like, they have to go 5 1/3. That might be a little bit too long, but just, I think that generally making teams value pitchers go deep might actually shift the mindset and the value a little bit away from these flamethrowers that are only gonna go out and you're only relying on like 4 or 5 innings, you know, 4 innings. I think it might shift that at least a little bit. 'Cause we've seen, you know, guys like, I can't. Mason Miller, I can't believe I couldn't think of his name. He's one of my favorite people to watch right now. Mason Miller's throwing 100, 304, but when it's limited to just 1 inning, I mean, I guess it's a pretty small sample size, but he's been able to stay on, you know, the diamond at least, or the mound at least throughout this season. And when he's tried throughout his career to be a starter with those kind of velos, he hasn't thrown more than, you know, 60, 70 innings in a year in his entire career. So maybe it just moves the flamethrowers to the bullpen, which is where it's better for them to stay healthy. And then if the flamethrowers are just going to be bullpen arms, then maybe people value velocity a little bit less from starters, and it just keeps everybody more healthy overall. I don't know. It's tough. There's a lot of stuff that goes into it. I think that Major League Baseball reducing the pitch clock when base from 20 to 18 last year I thought was kind of crazy after all of the criticism that it got in terms of causing injuries, and it had only been in place for 1 year. I think that's kind of ridiculous that they already lowered it. I think that they should have at least let it play out for a little bit longer before they made adjustments to it. So I think that's one thing that I can almost definitively say I think that MLB is doing wrong in terms of dealing with this, but I don't really know what is the correct solution. Vansel, your last one. You got anything to say about it?
Not a ton. I feel like GMs will start to look for guys that can go deeper into games versus just pure stuff guys. So I think that there is, there's trends in what teams are looking for. Like there's the splitter sweeper trend right now. And like there's also going to be trends in the build the pitchers have as far as being able to provide depth, kind of like the innings eaters that the Cardinals have. Maybe get a little better quality out of them too. But I think it'll start to trend that way because you can't just have all these guys going hurt. We're already seeing new operations too, as far as like recovery time, because there's that new internal brace surgery as opposed to just like straight up Tommy John, which cuts the recovery time down too. So I think that'll help. I'm pro getting some kind of like a pre-tack baseball or something back, just so that guys don't have to grip the ball harder, like Tyler Glasnow was saying. Maybe something like that can help. But whether the game, I think as far as what baseball can do is create that shift sooner than what GMs and drafting and everything can cause. So I think we'll see it eventually, but Rob Manfred has the power to speed that up.
And I guess my question that I'll pitch to you all is that, put your baseball GM cap on, and maybe we can look at it in, sort of a fantasy context. Do you think that in any way, when you see a guy that's throwing high velocity, like let's look at, a guy like Jared Jones right now, do all of these pitching injuries and or even Paul Skenes, these pitching injuries, does that at all change your valuation of these players? Does that make them less valuable to you that everybody that's, I guess I shouldn't say everybody, but a lot of people that are throwing this hard are getting hurt. Does that make you look at a guy like Paul Skenes and look at a guy like Jared Jones and say, I'm going to value this guy less because they're going to miss a year or they're going to miss, a lot of time in their career projectably because of their velocity? Like, are you changing that at all? Ben, we can, let's go to you since you're the resident Paul Skenes dynasty owner.
Not super worried. I mean, I think he's going to be able to dominate with velocity. Yeah, he'll probably miss a year with TJ at some point. But, assuming he can avoid anything too like serious other than TJ, I don't think there's a lot stopping him. Miss a little bit of time, but it's whatever. And at a certain point, I think you got to evolve as a pitcher. You figure out that you can't keep doing that, and that's when you either like sink or swim. Like Max Scherzer used to be a guy who threw as hard as he could. Every single pitch was nasty, and at a certain point he learned to pitch rather than just throw nasty stuff. So I think Skenes will be super valuable for the next 4 or 5 years, but I think it's at that later point in your career where you kind of figure out what kind of pitcher you are actually beyond the velocity and like what kind of long-term career you can have.
Vance, what do you got?
One thing that probably hurts the players a lot, with the whole 6 year before free agency and arbitration, whatnot, like for example, Spencer Strider ended up signing a 6 year, $75 million extension. And I think we can all agree that he's worth more than 12.5 million but just being the way that the contract, rookie contract situation kind of works out, I feel like it'll force those young pitchers to have to sign these team-friendly contracts just to guarantee more money. Because, I mean, we look at Shane Bieber, who's on a contract year. You know, that's really just kind of hurts him now for signing any kind of deal, because he'll probably have to do a similar thing to Brandon Woodruff, Liam Hendricks, where he signs like a 2 year deal where one's just a recovery year, and then now have to go out and prove himself on that 1 year deal coming off Tommy John.
Right.
So I think it's going to force players into signing those kind of contracts. So it hurts the player value as far as what they're going to be able to get.
And then I do have sort of a connection to draw here. So I think that baseball is a little bit unique in that, in terms of hitting the ball and throwing the ball, it's strictly good to do the things faster. You know, like a faster pitch is in a vacuum pretty much always better than a slower one. And swinging your bat faster and hitting the ball harder is in a vacuum pretty much always better than not doing that. And I don't think there's something necessarily like that in any of the other sports. I guess like just running faster and stuff, but I don't think that's necessarily quite the same parallel. Like just with the arm, like obviously you throw, you know, footballs and you shoot basketballs and stuff, but there's nothing that like you don't want to like keep increasing that velocity because there's, you know, a bell curve there, whereas the more velocity it gets, the less effective it'll get. And I think that all of these players that we see going to Driveline in the off season to increase their bat speed or increase their pitch velocity, I think that could be contributing to some of these injuries. And that leads to my next question. It looks like there's a lot of oblique injuries that are kind of popping up with hitters recently. And this seems kind of new to me. I don't remember. I mean, obviously, there's always been people with oblique injuries, but I think this year specifically, just within the first couple of weeks, all of the lows and lows are on the IL with oblique injuries. Seiya Suzuki just went down with an oblique injury. There's just, I feel like I've been, and it could just be me getting in my own head and trying to see something out of nothing. But it seems like there's been a lot of oblique injuries and it's cropping up. And I think that the bat speed craze has been coming up, obviously, a little bit later than the pitch velocity craze. I think that just recently, over the last few years, people have been talking about bat speed, bat speed, bat speed, and people are trying to increase it now. And maybe, you know, that the swinging of the bat and the torque. Maybe bodies aren't built for the kind of bat speed that people are getting up to, kind of in the same way the bodies aren't built to throw 103 miles an hour for six innings. And maybe that's kind of causing a lot of these oblique injuries. So I don't know. It's just an interesting, maybe potential connection. Ben, what do you got?
To be fair, I think with that, like, there's like a lot of ways to pull your oblique. Like, say I was running.
Okay.
So, like, and I don't know how Lau's injured theirs, but like, most of the time, I think you're running.
It could be more tender because you're swinging so hard,
this
more
guy.
more vulnerable. But yeah, okay, that's fair.
Yeah, I don't want to be too contrarian, but there are a lot of oblique injuries every year at the beginning of the year. It's like baseball is one of the only sports that you utilize your obliques a lot, like when you swing and when you're diving, when you're throwing. And seems to always be at the beginning of the year. I don't know if guys just aren't stretched out or their bodies are just tight from the off season, but I don't feel like there's been an increase in oblique injuries, but I don't have the data to back up that feeling. So not to say that you're wrong, but it does seem like there's always, oblique injuries. And Ben said in the chat, and that's true. A lot of the teams that are in the northern part of the United States and Canada, so I guess the southern part, it is really cold this time of the year. So people just aren't as loose and limber as they probably could be. So.
Well, I think that's enough injury talk. Let's talk about some we've got one final segment here that I wanted to do on the show is a fill in the blank segment. So I'll give you a couple of examples of things I might say. So for example, I don't buy blank's hot start. I'm not worried about blank. I am worried about blank, etc. So hopefully you guys have prepared some players for these fill in the blanks. I can start on most of the fill in the blanks to give you guys some time to maybe kind of get an idea of what I'm getting at, or maybe, just come up with a name. So I'll start. The first fill in the blank that we'll do is I wish I had more shares of blank. So my answer is going to be Nick Lodolo. I'm a huge Nick Lodolo fan. I've been a huge Nick Lodolo fan. I thought he was one of my favorite breakout picks for 2023. I think he was pretty much the industry's favorite breakout pick for 2023. And then obviously he got hurt and didn't really get to see most of that season. And I was really confused this year that he was only going to miss, you know, the first week, 2 weeks. And nobody was talking about him like he was going to break out like they were talking about in 2023. Like, I don't understand. Like, nothing had changed. I think he's the best pitcher on his team. I don't understand why he was being drafted so lowly. He's got the strikeout stuff. His stuff is nasty. And, you know, he was only going to be gone for a week and a half. And I think, and I say I wish I had more shares of him. I have him in three of my five leagues. The only two leagues where I don't have him are actually the leagues that I have in common with Ben, because Ben is also a big Nick Lodolo guy and picked him before me. But I do wish I had him everywhere. Obviously, he had his first start over the weekend. Looked absolutely incredible. I think it was 10 Ks and had a no-hitter through five or something crazy like that. I think he's good. And I am very, very excited about him this year. I think he's going to be a huge breakout. And I think we'll be talking about him up at the top of pitchers in the league after this year, after he goes all the way through. Vansel, who do you wish you had more shares of?
I wish I had more shares of Grayson Rodriguez, because I have him in a redraft league, so being that I'm only in two leagues, so I guess I wish I had him in Dynasty. But man, every time I watch him, he just looks so good. The only thing he can't do is locate a changeup, but everything else looks phenomenal.
Yeah, and he's another velocity guy. I don't know if you should be worried or not. No, but another yeah, a lot of pitchers, because I also could throw Sonny Gray on that list. I feel like Sonny Gray falls into the same category Nick Lodolo does. Like, I really like Sonny Gray. He's always been good. I could talk about Sonny Gray for a long time. I'm a big Sonny Gray guy. Brock, who do you got? Who do you wish you had more shares of?
I think for me it'll be Anthony Volpe. I was a big doubter of the Yankees. I also traded away Anthony Volpe at the end of last year, but his 1,000 OPS to start this season. He has only two home runs, but 10 walks to 10 Ks, six stolen bases. He already has 22 hits and 59 ABs. That's a .373 average. He just looks like he's breaking out, and he is just going to be an awesome shortstop for fantasy. Kind of a perennial 2020 guy at the floor, I think. Maybe he doesn't hit that many home runs, but man, he looks awesome. And I really wish I would have got him because he was going super late in drafts.
Yeah, I think that's a really, really good answer. I also wish I had more shares of Anthony Volpe because, like you said, he was going so late. He was so cheap. I feel like everyone was so down because they saw that average. I can't remember exactly what it was. I think it was like 205 or 210 or something last year. It was very, very low. But yeah, no, he looks like a completely different hitter this year. And it's been very, very exciting to watch Anthony Volpe. All right, Ben, who do you wish you had more shares of?
I wish I had any shares of William Contreras. The man will not stop hitting. I've always loved him, like, as far as a hitter goes. Brewers turned him into a really good defensive catcher now. Big candidate when he hits free agency to make a lot of money, I think. But he's finally having a fully breakout offensive year. I think he's going to finish with 30 homers and a ton of counting stats. The Brewers lineup, I think, is actually going to be very good. I think the pitching's what's going to hold them back. So I think Wilson's going to have a massive year. I mean, William. And, I wish I owned him in any of my leagues.
Yeah, no, I mean, that answer is great too. I think everybody looked at William because William Contreras was the number one overall catcher in fantasy last year. And I think that a lot of people don't really realize that. And he was being drafted, 3 or 4 rounds after Adley Rutschman this year. And I think that they should be, especially in categories leagues, I think William should be drafted above him. In points leagues, I could see it's probably a little bit closer just because Adley's play discipline is so good. But I think they're pretty much, similar values. And I think that William Contreras, I also agree that I had more shares of him. It did feel like the value at catcher late in drafts was always good. But I do think William is just gonna absolutely separate himself from that pack and be very valuable. I'll start with I'm not worried about. So I'm gonna say I feel like saying Ronald Acuna is a little bit of a cop out just because obviously we're not worried about Ronald Acuna. So I guess I'll go with Corey Seager. I don't think Corey Seager's year has been off to that bad of a start. I think he might even be slightly injured right now. I know that he was not playing today. He was not in the lineup, but I did see that he does not have a barrel yet this year. Or if he, I don't know if that's entirely updated. He might have gotten a barrel recently. But I'm just not worried about Corey Seager. He's so proven that even through all of his injuries, because he's dealt with a pretty injury, ridden career, and he's off to this slow start. Even if he has to miss a little bit of time, like he shows that he can consistently come back and just be a great hitter and in a great lineup too. I'm not worried about Corey Seager. I think Corey Seager is going to be good this year. Barack, who are you not worried about?
Well, I was going to say Julio Rodriguez, but it kind of seems like that might fall in the same category as Ronald Acuña. He's been a slow starter pretty much every year that he's been in the league. His April and first few weeks of May are just always abysmal. But then he catches fire. His underlying metrics look really bad, but I'm going to go with another shortstop that probably also I shouldn't worry about, but it's kind of like Corey Seager, and that's Francisco Lindor. He's batting. Let's see. He's batting 141 with one home run, no stolen bases, and like a right around a 500 OPS. But his K percentage is 96th percentile, his whiff percentage 83rd percentile, chase percentage 79th percentile. His average exit velos are down a little bit, which is maybe a little worrisome, but everything under the hood looks good. He's just not getting hits. Maybe just a little too selective. Maybe he's faced more righties lately. As a switch hitter, he's a little better from the right. I'm not entirely sure. I haven't watched a lot of Mets games because they're kind of gross this year, but I'm not really worried about Francisco Lindor. But this is I think, an odd start for him. Although everything under the hood looks pretty good. So kind of follow the same path as you, honestly, Nick.
Agreed. Also, not worried about Francisco Lindor. Ben, you got somebody that you are not worried about.
Yeah, I'm not worried about Yoshinobu Yamamoto. I think he was like a big panic pick early, and he really hasn't been fantastic, but he's adjusting to a new league, and I think drawing the Padres as two of your first four starts is pretty tough, especially after they saw you well the first time. So, I mean, obviously that's going to be, not the easiest start, and he actually fared a little better the second time. So I think he's a guy who's going to settle in to, maybe a mid threes kind of ERA this year. And then as he gets comfortable within the league, like slowly work his way into ace kind of conversations.
Yeah, I like that. I like that quite a bit. Vansel, who are you not worried about?
Before I get into mine, is Corey Seager really off to a slow start?
He didn't have any
Batting.
barrels. He didn't have a single barrel last time I checked.
He's batting 304.
Okay. Well, maybe not that slow a start.
Just like the Dodgers are a dark horse all over again. My pick is Bryce Harper. He's batting sub 200. Oh, where does stats go? With three home runs, and all three of those home runs came in one game. But he's still hitting the ball fairly hard. 91.1 average exit velocity. It's kind of chasing a lot, but I mean, I'm not too worried about it. I feel like Bryce Harper's been that guy for a while. And I mean, he's always seems like just at a moment's notice will turn it on and take off for a 2 month stretch where he bats like 350 with 20 bombs. So I'll go with Bryce Harper.
Yeah, I think that's a good one. I'm going to do an honorable mention to Wyatt Langford. I think after all the hype that he got, seeing a little bit of a lack of power here at the beginning of the year, people are probably a little bit disappointed, at least. But his play discipline's been fine. He's been hitting the ball hard. I think that, I don't know, at this point last year, I think a lot of people were pretty low on Gunnar Henderson, and obviously Gunnar's woes went pretty deep into the season. So hopefully Wyatt Langford's woes don't go that deep into the season, but I think you would be wrong to worry about him personally. All right, let's take I'm not worried about and go right into I am worried about. Let's all talk about somebody that we are worried about. I said I would go first on all of these, but I have to think about somebody that I am worried about. Okay, I'll say Cody Bellinger. I think we're seeing a lot more of those underlying stats that we all talked about all last year and all that regression. Maybe coming back to get him. Obviously, you can say that, he signed late and didn't really get a full spring training, and maybe it's just a slow start. And I honestly don't hate that explanation, but I am a little bit worried about him. I'm worried about Nico Hoerner, just to name another Cub. I think Nico Hoerner's fine. I think he's a good baseball player, but in terms of fantasy, I think that batting sixth, seventh, eighth is a lot different than batting first, which is where he was all last year. So that is another person that I'm worried about. And I'll throw Corbin Carroll out there too. This has a chance to be an ultimate, like hot take or not hot take, old takes exposed. But I'm worried about Corbin Carroll, not only this year, but forever in the future. How many home runs did he hit last year? Let me check how many home runs he hit last year. He hit 25 home runs last year. My hot take is going to be that is going to be his career high. Like I said, this has a chance to very much not look like a good take in the future. Like, I think the stolen bases are always going to be there. I think he could, hit for a decent average, but I'm worried about his power a lot. Like I said, obviously it probably could just be an overreaction, but like he's walked 9 times, he struck out 5 times. Like, I think he's fine and going to be a really good player. It's just the power specifically that I'm worried about. All right, I gave everyone like four people that I'm worried about. Let's hear it out. Ben, you got anybody you're worried about?
Yeah, Nick, I'm worried about Luis Castillo.
Hmm.
So he's been pretty bad to start the year, giving up a ton of hits, not missing as many bats as he usually does. Velo down is down a tick, nothing like super noticeable. But the main thing is he's not getting lefties out at all. Lefties are currently hitting 450 against him through his first three starts. Michael Busch took him deep for a three-run shot yesterday. So his woes continue. It seems his changeup doesn't have as much swing and miss. He's really struggling versus lefties. And you know, I feel like that's something he's really going to need to figure out. If the changeup's not going to be as effective as it once was, he's going to need to implement something to get left-handers out because he's just not doing it. And I'm a very worried owner.
I kind of like that you brought up a pitcher because I was not really thinking about pitchers when I was listing the people I'm worried about off, and I'm going to add some people to the list here. Or
I'm
maybe I'll
also
just.
worried about Nico, to be fair. He's
Yeah.
also paying more this year.
Can you please let us go before you say
On
six more
Nico.
names?
I will
Hey, I said
say.
the same name he did. I was also going to say.
I'm going to say. So at the beginning of the year, I was a little bit concerned about Zach Gallen. His velocity was way down, his whiffs were way down, and his whiffs are still down. But I think over the course of his last couple starts, he's had a little bit more of encouraging, an encouraging outlook. And I think I'm less worried about him. I think he's capable of doing well with what he's currently got. Yeah, so I'm not really as worried about Zach Allen anymore, but somebody that I am worried about is Aaron Nola. Aaron Nola's swing and miss has not been there this year at all. And everybody's gonna point to the start that he had today because it was very good. It's against the Rockies. The Rockies are a triple-A lineup, and I don't like to discredit a good start just because of the opponent, but I am not encouraged. Really, at all. I watched a lot of the start. He's getting a hit. I don't know. It's just, I've been very discouraged by Aaron Nola this year. I think he's going to be just a hit or miss guy. I think any given day, Aaron Nola goes out there, he could give up, six runs. So yes, I'm worried about Aaron Nola. And like I said, Zach Gallen was originally on my list, but he's worked his way off. Brock, since you're so eager to give us people that you're worried about, let's hear it.
Well, you were more eager than I was because I was going to say Aaron Nola. I was first going to say Nico Horner. You said Nico Horner, and then I was going to say Aaron Nola, and then you said Aaron Nola. So I'm scrambling, and I think I'm going to say there's two. I'm not really that worried about him. I guess I'll just say O'Neal Cruz has struck out 29 times in 69 at bats. Which is a little worrisome. He's batting 232 with a 651 OPS. That is not really the start that I thought that he was going to have. Nolan Jones leads the MLB in strikeouts also. He has 30 Ks in 66 ABs. A lot of people were drafting him way too early. He has a sub 600 OPS. And then as far as arms go, this is a personal one, and I have him double dipped. It's Jesus Luzardo. Oh my goodness, he has a 7.65 ERA. Fastball velo's kind of where it always was, but his whiff percentage is pretty average where he used to be really good. I don't know, he just looks broken, and I think the Marlins are a dumpster fire, and I'm worried that he might just not care. So there's three short names there.
Yeah, I think those two bats that you brought up are two really good names. I brought up in the group chat the other day that O'Neal Cruz, like you mentioned, is still batting 230 something, and I think his strikeout rate is almost up to 45% now. And I'd like to think that even like worst case scenario strikeout rate for O'Neal Cruz is hopefully like low 30s, like 32. And if that's the case, as hard as he hits the ball, hopefully he, won't be in bad shape. But yes, I am worried about O'Neal Cruz. The reason why I was so high on him this year and during the spring is because he had really cut that strikeout rate. And now, I mean, like you said, it's been two or 3 weeks now, so it's maybe a little bit of an overreaction, but all of the skills that I saw and had hoped that he had improved on seem to have entirely disappeared. And Nolan Jones is kind of similar. I think Nolan Jones had strikeout problems a little bit in the minors, and last year came up and like had a high BABIP, was still kind of striking out, but this year has just looked entirely lost at the plate. So I think that also is a really good one. But also he's in the same way. Like if he just cuts that strikeout rate, I can't remember exactly what you just said, but it sounded like his was 45, almost 50%. If he just cuts that down to low 30s and he plays in Coors Field, it could be another like maybe a buy low opportunity. I don't think I have, oh, I maybe have one share of Nolan Jones, but I don't think it's a horrible idea to go and try and buy low on him. Because, I mean, I guess people that drafted Nolan Jones spent a pretty high pick on him, so they're going to be pretty reluctant to give him up. But they also could be very frustrated with him, so it could be, it could be a decent trade target. Because even if he just cuts that down to low 30s% and plays half his games in Coors Field, he could be a good investment moving forward. Vansel, who do you got? Who are you worried about?
Well, you took him also. Nobody. You named half the league. I will say for Nolan Jones, his issue is he is way too passive. That was his issue in the minors. And then he stopped doing that last year. And that's when he started his playing better. So if he can return to doing that, he'll start hitting better. But my concern is Josh Hader. His WOBA has been trending up this whole his last like 100 plate appearances. He's just doesn't look elite. Really, that whole Astros bullpen is playing poorly. But I mean, he again came in a non-save situation, gave up two earned, loaded the bases, and then got pulled. I think maybe he got one out, but I mean, he just does not look that good. So I'll go with the reliever because I don't think anyone else named one and go with Josh Hader.
I like it. I like the reliever spotlight. I am going to continue the reliever trend. What I'm talking about, I'm excited about the beginning of Blank's breakout. I'm going to say Mason Miller. I already mentioned him once on this podcast. It's hard to understate how good he looks when you watch him pitch. They're not trying to stretch him out to be a starter anymore. They've stuck to keeping him in the bullpen and only one inning spurts. He's been pitching late in all the games that he's pitched in. He looks incredible. He is near must-watch TV. Watching him just absolutely humiliate hitters is very enjoyable. And I think he is skill-wise, maybe the bet almost instantly the best closer in the league. He is just incredible to watch. There's not really any reason to watch Oakland Athletics baseball unless they are up in the ninth inning and Mason Miller is coming in. Very, very enjoyable to watch and highly recommend. And I'm sure you'll see clips on Pitching Ninja all year long. He just is absolutely electric and very fun to watch. And I'm excited about his breakout because I think he's going to be incredible. And obviously, I hope long term they can stretch him out. But even if he just stays in the bullpen, he's going to be a fun player to watch. Vansel, whose breakout are you excited about?
Yeah, I'm going with the whole Athletics roster. They're 7-9 and ahead of the Astros and the Mariners. Nobody's talking about that. Nobody wants to admit that the Athletics are going to make the wild card. So I'm here for some Athletics baseball. One last ride. Last dance. My breakout pick will be Mason Wynn. A little homer pick.
Yes. Yes.
I mean,
Two
he's
more
just
hits today, or maybe just one.
one. But he's hitting the ball really well. He's using the whole field. He's not trying to do too much with his skill set. Not the biggest power guy, but he's really been using like going the other way, really effectively hitting the ball hard. So I'll go with Mason Wynn. And my other one will be Jonathan Class A of the Mariners, just got called up, making his debut today. 2050 in the minor leagues last year, I believe, across multiple levels. Had a over 1,000 OPS at AAA prior to this call up. So Mariners could use some offensive help. So I'm excited to watch him play.
Nice. All right, Brock, you are excited about the beginning of Blank's breakout.
I think the most exciting breakout for me is CJ Abrams on the Washington Nationals. He has four home runs and three stolen bases, but he has a 1,061 OPS. Came over from the Padres in that Juan Soto deal, and he just looks like an absolute superstar. He's just kind of an electric baseball player. He's fun to watch. The Nationals are honestly starting to kind of be fun to watch, and he's a big part of that, offensively. So I don't know, I guess, entirely what else to say. As long as he can keep his strikeouts down, that's kind of really the only concern. But he's batting 314, and I don't know, he's kind of an electric baseball player. So CJ Abrams will be fun to watch for years to come, and I think this is his breakout.
And two extra base hits off Tyler Glass now today, one of them being that fourth homer. So that is very exciting. All right, Ben, you were excited about the beginning of Blank's breakout. And if you don't say Michael Bush, I will be upset.
Well, like, yeah, Michael Bush, but I have another answer.
Okay, go ahead. Fine.
Yeah, I'm excited about Reed Detmers' breakout. It's been a guy I've been high on for like a couple years now. And he's like seems to finally be coming to fruition. His first year had great control, kind of middling stuff. His next year came back with really good stuff. Didn't always control it well, and he seems to be pairing him, and it's going swimmingly so far. Striking out a bunch of people, not allowing hits. His FIP's sub three right now. He looks like the ace that the Angels needed just too late. So it's kind of tough for the Angels, but super excited for Reed Detmers, and pumped as an owner of him in Dynasty.
Yeah, I think only good things to say about Reed Detmers. I think he's like the perfect post-hype guy because I think he, as well as Nick Lodolo, were big, breakout picks from last year. And I think that he made kind of a small step last year, made some improvements to his game, but this year has made that huge leap that people were hoping that he would make last year. And I am super excited about Reed Detmers too. He looks incredible. And then we'd be crazy not to mention Michael Bush. I know I kind of already said his name, but Michael Bush has been absolutely incredible to start this year. He honestly looks like he's been one of the most complete hitters in the majors in terms of just taking really, really good at bats, but also adding the power on top of it. Like he's been incredible. He has now six homers. His OPS is almost 1100. 10th best in Major League Baseball. Like, he looks like he's one of the most complete hitters. Like, he hasn't been striking out a ton. He's been very fun to watch, and it does look like he's finally getting that breakout that he had kept from him for so long, being in quadruple A for the Dodgers for such a long time. So that has been very fun, and been contributing to a lot of the Cubs' success at 9-6. All right, so next up we've got I Don't Buy Blank's Hot Start. I Don't Buy Blank's Hot Start. Okay, I don't have a great one for this, so if anybody does have a great one for this and can give me some time to think, that would be fantastic.
I don't buy Brenton Doyle's hot start, center fielder for the Colorado Rockies. I don't think he can hit. He's still striking out at like a 40% rate like he did last year. He also does not hedge his like hit tool concerns with any walks at all. I think he might have one walk. And he walked like 26 times in like 120 games last year. Sure, he's got a little bit of pop. He'll steal a few bags, but I think he's gonna get 220 with a 600 some OPS. And maybe he gives you a 2020 year, but like it's not gonna be super awesome in fantasy in any circumstance because the OPS is never gonna be high enough.
Nice. All right. You gave me just the amount of time to come up with one. I'm going to say Tim Anderson. I don't know if anybody's actually, he's batting 278. His OPS is still 612. So I don't know if you'd call it that hot of a start, but just batting 278, he has two stolen bases. So maybe people are thinking that Tim Anderson has regained a little bit of, what he once was before on a new team, new environment. Maybe he's got it back. But his Statcast page is abysmal. His sprint speed is down near 50th percentile now. He has one extra base hit all year long. He's batting 278 and he has one extra base hit. Every other hit has been a single. I don't think he's got good team context. He's batting fourth right now in the Marlins lineup ahead of Jazz Chisholm. I don't know what they're doing with their lineup construction there. His chase rate is in the I don't know if you say first percentile, but like it's the worst in the league. His barrel, he has zero barrels all year. Like I said, he's got one single. His average exit velocity is 86. Like it's just bad. His X slug is in the ninth percentile. Like, I don't know if anybody's buying into the Tim Anderson is regaining like that old, you know, batting over 300 and stealing bases and scoring a lot of runs, but it's not happening. So I do not buy that hot start. Brock, whose hot start are you not buying into?
Yeah, I also don't know that I have any great one. I know one, I guess I'll just say, and I don't think that he's really that big of a name either, but Will Benson on the Reds kind of is off to a hot start. He has two home runs. I'm afraid that he's going to fall into a platoon. I don't know. I guess I'm just kind of struggling to think of guys who are off to really hot starts. Maybe by the end of this, I'll think of one. But for now, I'll just go with Will Benson. I know some, and he's probably on most waiver wires, so that's maybe not a great pick. But yeah, I mean, Jerkson Profar is 916 OPS, and I was hyping him up earlier. So part of me wants to just say he's not that good. But then it kind of walks back the whole irrelevant conversation that we had earlier. So, yeah. I don't know. This might be a hot take, but I don't know that there are any frauds that are off to great starts. Maybe Vansel and Ben will find some different ones. Or I guess Ben already went. But Vansel, who do you have?
I'm going with Brandon Marsh. He's got four home runs already to start the season when, like, I believe it was 12 and 11 in the 2 years prior. Probably a little high on the average side too. I'm sure that'll come down. But, I mean, he strikes out a good amount too. He's platooning less this year, I believe. So at least he's now getting some more bets against lefties. But I think that the power stroke will regress and he won't keep up the pace that he's on now.
Yeah, I think that's good. Brock, I think yours, I mean, I think that was, you know, maybe not a perfect answer, but I think that, you know, Will Benson, he's been getting on base more than, you know, he ever has in the past. His strikeout rates have always been a problem. There's the platoon issue. And I do think that his roster rate is probably going up in a lot of leagues because he has been getting on base. He's been stealing a ton of bags. I think he already has, you know, 4, 5, 6 steals. I'm sure he's a name that's been, you know, going around in terms of waiver wire ads at the beginning of the year. And I think that I would not necessarily be buying into his hot start. Well, a name that I was going to throw out there is Colton Cowser. And I know that's kind of a, that's kind of a bummer take because he obviously is very exciting, kind of breaking out seemingly on the Orioles. I don't think he's as good as what we're seeing right now, but I think that's kind of obvious. I don't know. I don't have a lot of holes to poke into Colton Cowser's start, to be completely honest. I think he's going to be very good. His walk rates in the minors have always been very good. His strikeout rates have never really been that alarming. When he first came up to AAA, he was 22 and he struck out 30% of the time, which like isn't horrible. I think maybe his – no, I mean, I think he's just going to be good. I lied. I don't really have that many doubts about Colton Cowser. I would be a little bit worried just about playing time and like platoons and stuff just with that team and how many players they have on their team. And today he did have the Golden Sombrero. He did strike out 4 times in the game tonight. And maybe if he, you know, shows any regression, like they've got names, they've got bats they can put in the lineup for him. So that is a little bit of a concern with Colton Cowser, but I do think it is an exciting time for him. And I don't think that you should entirely not buy in and, you know, sell off entirely. But I mean, I think he's on pace to hit over 40 home runs right now, which I don't know is going to happen. All right. That was pretty much all I had for, do you guys have any other fill in the blanks that you want to propose to the group, or any ideas that we need to do before we end the show? Brock, what do you got?
What about a team that has surprised us the most early on this year? Obviously, a super small sample size for all of this, but we will start with Ben. He looks like he's ready to answer.
I'm not.
I've got an answer. I'll say the Brewers. I think the Brewers, I mean, I honestly have been surprised by their lineup. I think Rhys Hoskins looks great. I think Jackson Churio kind of has looked better than I expected him to be this early in his career, unfortunately. He's been really good. He's already batting leadoff, which is exciting. He's hitting homers. Yeah, I mean, I think their lineup has looked really good, but I do just think their pitching is just going to be a massive problem. DL Hall's velocity is just not there. He looks bad. Aaron Ashby looked bad. Like, I just am not really that excited about many starters in their rotation, and I don't think that their hot start is going to be very sustainable. But I have been quite surprised by their start, and I don't mean to entirely discredit them. I will say that I have been, you know, surprised by their hot start. They're 10-5 and they just lost today. So they were 10-4 before that. They had a couple, they had at least one good start from Joe Ross. Yeah, that Joe Ross. or maybe it was a different Joe Ross. It's got to be a different Joe Ross. It can't be the same Joe Ross, can it? The old Joe Ross? Maybe it is. He's 30 years old. I can't remember if this is the same Joe Ross or a different Joe Ross. But he had a quality start, which is crazy to think about in, you know, the state of the league right now. But yeah, that's my most surprising team. I've been impressed by them. They've been doing very well, and their lineup, I think, is going to be better than people thought it was going to be.
Yeah, I think that's fair. Vansel, are you ready? Or Ben, are you ready? Speak freely. Okay. Ben?
Yeah, I don't buy the Yankees. I don't think they're going to have enough arms. I think at some point they're going to run out of arms in their rotation, and the American League will just be too competitive. I don't see them beating Baltimore for the division with just how deep they are. You know, Aaron Judge goes down for a little bit. If they have a couple arm injuries, even, you know, one or two to, you know, some of their other big guys who aren't Gerrit Cole, I don't see them necessarily having the juice.
If you had to guess how many walks their starting pitcher had today, how many would you guess?
Five.
Seven.
That's a lot.
Luis Gil had seven walks today in five innings.
You didn't give me a chance to answer.
Because you dropped him. Vansel, who surprised you, good or bad?
Nothing. This is exactly how I thought the season would pan out.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right.
I have the
script. I guess now you're just you got a great foresight on you. I think, at least for me, the reason I pose the question is the AL West seems all out of whack right now. The Astros are 6-11. The Mariners are 6-10. The Rangers are in first, like I predicted. But then it's Angels and Athletics in second and third. So, I mean, obviously super, super, super small sample size, but the Astros have looked terrible. and they lost Framber Valdez and Hunter Brown, might have Christian Javier maybe, but they and Justin Verlander is hurt, but Hunter Brown was kind of the next guy and he's looked abysmal. So, and like Vance said earlier, Josh Hader's also struggled. So that seems like a huge surprise to me. They have a negative 13 run differential thus far. So,
yeah. And yeah, I think the throwback Royals, Royals obviously should be mentioned here. I think 11-6, absolutely ridiculous. I think that it's crazy how well they've been playing. We've mentioned them a couple times already in the show. Seth Lugo, Michael Wacha, both been very good. Bobby Witt. Vinny was in a slump to start the season, but now has picked it up. Mikel Garcia was playing really well to start the season, but it's now kind of in a slump. MJ Melendez has been good. Even Nelson Velasquez has had a pretty good start to his season.
Yeah, all this Royals hype, and they're still in second to my Cleveland Guardians, the favorite to win the AL Central.
Yeah, I mean, I think the Cleveland Guardians have scored the most runs in all of baseball, haven't they?
I think that might be right. The Orioles, the Padres actually, I think the Padres have. But, yeah, they're top five, which is a surprise. Josh Naylor looks awesome. So, but, yeah, the Royals are look as good as we all thought that they would. So, I think that – look, I even said it earlier, but the Central divisions are better than we thought, at least early on.
Yeah, at least it definitely looks like it. Yeah, well, I think I guess that's all I've got, unless anybody else has another category suggestion. Ben, you got something?
No, man, I'm done.
All right. And we have any shout outs? I'll say shout out to Grandma Thiele. She listened to the podcast from last week after I had dinner with her. She was talking to me about it and gave it a listen. So shout out to her. Shout out, Paul. And now, Ben, you'll need to be aware for future episodes that my grandma will be listening.
Hey, Grandma Thiele, apologies.
Just kidding.
She can apology to Grandma Thiele.
She can, you can say whatever you want.
Ben did catch himself earlier in the podcast. I don't know if anyone else got that, but he was about to let a bad word fly and he stopped midway.
Yeah, I was surprised. He hasn't, he's never stopped himself before. I don't know what's stopping him now.
Yeah.
Well, Vansel, do you have a fun fact for us to close this out?
I do. I'm glad somebody remembered since our host seemingly always ignores it.
Sorry, I have it on
the notes. He requested it.
I have it on the notes, but I was off the notes and looking at teams that I was surprised at or trying to find them.
The team that will have the most miles traveled this season is the San Diego Padres with 51,690.
That is very fun.
Does that include Seoul?
Couldn't tell you. Probably. And then total miles traveled this year, 1,061,373.
That's a lot of miles traveled. I don't know if you all saw, but there was somebody posted on Twitter a photo of Oakland Athletics players in the baggage claim for Southwest Airlines and how that they had just flown with the entire Oakland Athletics team on Southwest, which is absolutely insane.
They're trying to reduce their carbon footprint by taking public flights instead of their own private transportation. That's very progressive of them.
I guess, but they've got to be the only team in Major League Baseball that's not flying private.
I think they are. It wasn't it a few years ago when Paul Blackburn, now that everyone has an all-star, there's like the all that drama about him, like everyone chartered their own private flight for their all-stars, and then Paul Blackburn had to fly like American Airlines or whatever the cheapest airline was at the time.
Yes, I do remember seeing that. And also, I guess we'd be crazy not to mention we've got a guest next week. We've had two guests on the pod previously, both college baseball players, and also I might add, both playing out of their minds this year. I'm pretty sure Indy Stanley, I think, has like the third or fourth best batting average in all of the nation in his league, which is pretty incredible. He's hitting the crap out of the ball. And then we had Dalton Bargo, who is a sophomore at Tennessee, playing pretty well. He's not starting every day. Like I said, sophomore Tennessee is a good program, but he's been playing very well.
Six pumps over in 1,000 OPS.
Yeah, no, he's been playing very, very well. Like I said, he doesn't start every day, but still playing very well.
I'm pretty sure he hit every day.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure Dalton Bargo's OPS is like 1,400 too. So they're both playing very, very well.
Good music effect. If you want to play better, come get interviewed.
Exactly. People are always talking about, you know, the MLB The Show curse. We need to talk about the chin music blessing that we give to players, and they start immediately playing out of their mind.
There are a lot of hits in this podcast.
Yes.
All our wash talent goes to our interviewees.
But next week, on Monday, if all goes according to plan, on the 22nd of April, we will be interviewing Blake Tibbery. Tibbery, I'm not exactly sure how to pronounce his name. I'll have to ask before we bring him on. But he played college at Louisville and was drafted in the third round to the Mets and played in their system for a little bit. And I am excited that we are getting our first player that's been drafted on the pod. So that's incredibly exciting. I am so very thankful for him being willing to, you know, take out his time and talk to us. And that should be a really good show for everybody next week. And then after we chat with him, he will start ripping the cover off the ball on Independent League and then get a contract in Major League Baseball. yeah, that's all we got. Thanks for listening. And we will see you next week with Blake.